It's 1934. Virtually, we are at Clonegam, outside Port Law in County Waterford. Beautifully situated, if only occasionally used, church. Sits beside the seat, Curramore, of Lord Waterford, and its history and monuments are very tied up with the Waterford estate. The family name of the Curramore family is of course Beresford, and that reminds us that two of the Archbishops of Armagh of the 19th century were of the Beresford connection. John George, who also presented the Campanile in Trinity College Dublin, and Marcus Gervais Beresford, who was Archbishop of Armagh at the time of disestablishment, indeed sat in the chair of the early General Synods as the church set about its work of governmental and financial reconstruction. So there's a lot to be thankful for in terms of the connection of Clonegam and the Beresford primates who gave so much of themselves to the Church of Ireland's story in those turbulent years. We're meanwhile in 1934. Now, despite Yeats's speech about being no petty people and its aftermath, and therefore issues like the defence of the appointment of the Protestant librarian in County Mayo, which I mentioned before, clear efforts on the part of the Free State to apply the rules fairly to the minority, there remained a caricature, perhaps especially in the north, that this was a so-called Catholic state. Home rule is Rome rule and all that. And in one of his most infamous pieces of rhetoric, the Northern Prime Minister Craig Avon, a man who, unlike a predecessor Carson, had within himself something of a partitionist mentality, he declared that, quote, "They still boast of Southern Ireland being a Catholic state. All I boast of is that we are a Protestant parliament and a Protestant state." End of quote. And how the demography has changed more recently. But I suppose it was from the moment of this utterance that the minority in Northern Ireland felt they had been provided with, from on high, official justification to feel second class and more than somewhat excluded. The unfolding story is sadly familiar. People with more than one vote, particularly of the unionist persuasion. Gerrymandering of local elections, particularly in the city of Derry. And no time to go into that now, but certainly things were constructed in relation to local representation that meant that the nationalist community never had the influence on the city that and its administration that was justified by numbers. Neglect of West Ulster in terms of infrastructure and location of everything from motorways to universities. Brookporus, another PM, his declaration that he wouldn't have one of them about the place, referring to a member of the minority religious persuasion, the unfair allocation of housing and so on. The Northern Ireland state had, and we must be fair about this, undoubted achievements, some thanks to the British Exchequer, the extension into Northern Ireland of the National Health Service. And if there's ever a United Ireland, how the health service will be aligned with what is assumed in the north will be one of the great economic and administrative challenges. But Northern Ireland was not an inclusive place. And I think that can be fairly stated in relation to those years. In the decade of centenaries here in the Republic, when we think in the present year of events like Bloody Sunday and the burning of Cork, we perhaps don't think ahead enough to coming matters, including the forthcoming centenary of the Northern Ireland state and the opening of its parliament in 1921, and how to mark them not just interestingly, but in a way that will involve both accuracy and fairness and a generous willingness in the South to be somehow attentive to and even contribute to how such an anniversary is observed.